For a brief, hopefully brief, opening this morning, meditation, I've entitled my talk, Silent, Quiet, Still. Habakkuk 2, verse 20 says, "But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." And I was thinking about this, had a conversation with one of you here a while back, about the concept of silence and stillness and quietness and how it affects the way we live our lives and the words that come out of our mouths and the way we approach a lot of different things. It's interesting, when I started researching into what the Bible says about silence, that the verse that I just read is one of the few verses that talks about silence in a good way. We're naturally afraid of silence. There's all different kinds of silence. I remember when I was a boy, and especially when mom and dad were gone, and maybe it was just a few of us children at home, and we were old enough to stay there for the night, but maybe not old enough to be just totally delighted about it by ourselves. And there was our house was fairly old, and there was a set of squeaks that my brothers and sisters, I'm sure, remember, that started at the bottom of the stairs and squeaked slowly up the stairs and down the hall. If you were listening wide awake around 2 o'clock in the morning, you could hear it. And it was nerve-wracking if you were 11 years old in the top bunk with your head under the covers. There's that kind of silence, a fearful silence, a scared silence, what's going to happen silence. How many of your parents have come upon a scene of a crime in progress, and you ask, what is going on here? And there is silence. There's guilty silence. And nobody quite knows how to phrase this. What's going on? That's another kind of silence. And there's the silence that is part of something that's abandoned. You ever notice a difference between an empty house where people live there, and an empty house where nobody has lived for a long time? It's silent. It's almost like there's a silence that comes along with abandonment. And the Bible talks a lot about that kind of silence. And if you read through the Psalms, there's a lot of pleading for God not to be silent. Don't abandon us. Don't leave us. Don't be silent. We've got problems, Lord. Don't leave us and walk away from us. There's a silence of death. The silence that as mortals we feel deeply. The knowledge that a loved one will never speak again. They'll never hear their voice again. Maybe it comes back to us in a dream years later. Here a while back I had a dream about Francie, my sister. And it was just like she was here again. And I could hear her voice. Just the way, and I almost forgot how she sounded, except in my dream there she was, talking. But there's a silence of death, the knowledge that there's never going to be another sound. There's an abashed silence. The Bible talks about how Jesus silenced the Pharisees, and they would come to him with these questions and try to trap him and trick him with sneaky questions and so on. And it says, finally, he silenced them. There's that kind of silence, a silence of abashment. I have nothing left to say. Or maybe it's an outmaneuvered silence. There's the awkward silence that happens between two people who hardly know each other, and the conversation seems to be going pretty well, and then all of a sudden it stops, and, you know, ever had that moment where, okay, just awkward silence. I heard a beautiful story about awkward silence last night, but I'm not going to share it. You know, that it's just, no, what do you say? You can't extricate yourself. And then there's the companionable silence. A silence when you don't need to say anything. Because the two of you are just together, and it's a good time, and you're both enjoying it, and just enjoy the silence. There's creative silence. A silence in which we're thinking. And the wheels are turning. There's attentive silence. Have you ever in a service or maybe at a program or something, little girl is up front singing, and everything gets totally, totally quiet. Everybody's listening and just hoping she makes it through. And it's a beautiful time, a beautiful shared silence. What connotation does silence have for you? I'd like to look at some biblical associations with silence, with quietness, and with stillness. But before, you know, I wish sometimes that my mind was more orderly and I could just give you an A to Z. This isn't that today. It's not, because I'm not that kind of person. But there's some observations I have on this. So maybe it will allow you to take this farther in your own thoughts. But before I say, my intention was to speak on the good of silence, the good of stillness. And that's why I said I was surprised that all the associations that I found in the scripture were actually associations of negativity, of deadness, of apathy, of abandonment. But I'd like to talk about the good things about stillness. But before I talk about those good things, I'd like to draw our attention to the fact that silence, actual silence, is different than deafness. And when we're looking for peace, when we're trying to find a place of calm and trying to find a place of rest, a moment of silence, it's important that we don't mistake that moment of silence, or that we don't mistake our own deafness for silence. That when there's a cry for help, that we think we don't hear. We don't hear it. It's my dad ears, unfortunately, are tuned to certain sounds and not so much to other sounds. And it's distressing how I can wake up all bright and happy in the morning and I can tell Eunice, well, that was pretty good. Baby didn't wake up last night, did she? Well, she said three times. So I was enjoying silence, but there wasn't actually silence. And she can hear. I don't know how she does it. But she can hear, just about hear the baby breathe in the next room, I think. And, you know, her ears are tuned to it. And so let's not mistake what we think to be silence for what is actually our deafness. Because there are people around us who need us, who are crying many times. And it's a tragedy when we live our own little lives and think that all is well when it actually is not. And our responsibility is to reach out. I'm going to read some verses that the Bible, in which the Bible talks about silence. And these are some of the negative verses. Psalm 31, verse 18 says, "Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak grievous things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. This thou hast seen, O Lord. Keep not silence, O Lord. Be not far from me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good. My sorrow was stirred. Unless the Lord had been my help, my soul had almost dwelt in silence." We're afraid of silence. We're scared of that silence that we're afraid we'll never get out of. And silence, this fear of silence, makes people do strange things. It makes us sometimes talk when we shouldn't. Maybe that awkward silence that I was talking about, maybe it just gets to us and we just start blurting things out that maybe we shouldn't be blurted. And just we talk about putting our foot in our mouth. That happens sometimes. And we just simply talk to avoid the silence because of that fear of quiet. And I think sometimes when people are like that, it's an indication of something that's going on in our hearts. We're not okay with silence. Why aren't we okay with silence? Why aren't we okay with just being quiet and listening, being attentive? Then there's the word quietness in the Bible. And in the Bible, the connotation in a lot of places is for quietness is of peace. It's of comfort. It's of contentment. It's of fullness. And sometimes it's of lack of vision, where we're quiet. We're not attentive. We're not looking. But many times it's a connotation of peace. And one of the beautiful verses about that is found in James where it talks about the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. That's the kind of quiet. That's a good kind of quiet. Psalm 107, verse 30. Then are they glad because they be quiet. So he bringeth them unto their desired haven. I'm sort of cherry-picking verses here because there's so many I couldn't read context in all of these. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. The words of wise men are heard in quiet more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tabernacle that shall not be taken down. Not one of the stakes thereof shall ever be removed, neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. Study to be quiet. Do your own business. Work with your own hands, as we commanded you. This concept of quietness, of peace, of comfort, contentment. And then there's the concept of stillness. And that's what I'd like to spend the most time talking about this morning. Silence has sort of a negative connotation, the idea of death, of abandonment, of fear, of guilt. Quietness has a lot of good connotations. And quietness and confidence shall be your strength, returning in rest. There's a lot of good things about quietness, but there's also a danger in quietness, this danger of becoming satisfied with a status quo that shouldn't satisfy us, of being quiet when we really should not be quiet. But stillness has a concept of waiting, of learning, of hoping, of observing, of trusting, and of choice. When you're put to silence, you don't have a choice anymore. You've used up your choices, and you have been silenced, just as Jesus silenced the Pharisees. When you're quiet, maybe it's because you're lazy. But when you are still, you have a voice, you have an idea, and yet you choose to wait on the Lord. You choose not to speak. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. This is Psalm 46. Therefore will we not fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah, come and behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Silence, stillness is a beautiful thing. And I tell my children sometimes that silence is such a beautiful thing that take care that you're improving on it when you break it. That the words that you speak are words that improve the silence. That they're kind words, that they're true words, they're gentle words. And silence, Robert Louis Stevenson said, silence is golden, but sometimes it's just yellow. You know, that's another negative bit maybe, but that's when silence needs to be broken, let's break it. When there is injustice, when there is wrong, let's not be cowardly. James 1, verse 19, wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Slow to speak and swift to hear. It's interesting. I was talking to a friend several years ago who had grown up here and was living in a different place. And I asked him, what is one of the cultural differences that most impresses you about where you live now? And he said, well, one of the things, after silence, he said, one of the things is that back home, if somebody asks you a question, you're expected to answer immediately. That was the way it's supposed to work. You ask the question, and somebody has an answer. Now, he said, where we live now, it's just a different culture. You ask a question, and then there's a long pause while they think about the answer to the question. And then they give you the answer. And he said, actually, it's been hard to get used to, but actually now I enjoy it. I think that's a good thing to consider. Those moments when nobody's around and your phone is shut off and you don't have anything in front of you to take your attention away, those stillness, those still moments, those quiet moments when you're alone with your mind, who or what inhabits your stillness in those times? The answer to that question informs our voice. Fear of stillness makes some people fill their world with noise. Fear of the cessation of sound makes them speak, whether they have anything to say or not. And stillness in life stands in contrast to the rush and the roar of the busy world that seems to swallow us up. We hurry and scurry here and there. And sometimes it seems as if we stop for just a moment, we're going to be left behind. That if we're not running, in some way we can't justify our existence. But the fact is that productivity doesn't necessarily share living space with panic. And too often we're simply living on hamster wheels of our own creation. How much better it is to be directed and focused. Standing still before God isn't a waste of time. It's there that we can find direction and focus. It's there that we gain a sense for what's truly important. It's there that God can speak to us. So make time to be alone with God in stillness, in quiet meditation. Now, does that sound like an impossibility? You might think so. There's too many duties screaming at us. Too many tasks remain undone. And life is a whirling scramble to catch a bus that's always leaving the station just as we're panting into it. And so our lives fly by, and the moments that we should cherish escape us and are gone forever. And then all of a sudden we wake up and we say, my life is half lived. I happen to be 38 years old. And am I living life the way I want to live it, the way I thought I would live it when I was 18? Maybe you're a busy mom, and the moments of reflection seem as within your reach as an afternoon trip to the moon. If it's not the breakfast dishes, it's a stubbed toe or brokering a peace deal between squabbling parties or cleaning up spilled milk again, and the garden needs weeding and the children are playing in the mud, wearing the clothes you just washed, supper needs to be made, and you don't recognize yourself when you look in the mirror. How are you supposed to find time to be alone and be quiet before the Lord? Or maybe you're a father. You know, it's said that our ideals show our weaknesses. And maybe that's what I'm doing here. You can see what's going on in my life right now. This is a need that I have. You're a father. And it feels like a losing battle sometimes to make ends meet, to keep up with career, to find time to do all that that you need to do at home, just around the house and keeping the place up. Church functions, taking the time to be the husband your wife thought she was marrying, to shepherd your children's hearts, and to maintain a real relationship with God. But the question that I have for myself and for you is, how much of this battle is inevitable? And how much of it is actually our choice that we make? Just as a song is not all sound, so life should not be all movement and rush. And just as music is not all stillness, neither is our ideal life all rest and quiet and peace and being left alone. Rather, there are moments to pause, to reflect, to enjoy, to pray, to savor, to laugh. And though sometimes we act as if we don't have a choice, the fact is that we can choose to stop for a moment, to bow our heads and give thanks, to call your wife and tell her that you love her, to listen to your child's tale of woe or their aspirations, or their achievements. There's time to send a word of encouragement to a friend. There's time to stop and ask God for direction and strength and courage. Take those moments. Find time to be still. But maybe that's not your problem at all. finding time to be still. Maybe stillness itself is the problem. Maybe that's all there is, it seems like, for you. And it seems like everybody else is rushing around you, and you're just simply being left behind. Stillness is like something you can't escape, hangs over you like a menacing nightfall. You wish you knew what to put your hand to, but it seems your lot is to stand on the sidelines while everybody else rushes about in a world that's passing you by. Maybe it's your health or your age or simply being overlooked in favor of squeakier wheels. It feels as if your lot is to be perpetually on the side. What about this? And I'd like to encourage you, if that's the way you feel, that there's a difference between silence and stillness. When we feel like we're being, like God, we're not sure what God has for us, but it feels like we're not being used. We want something. Stillness is not the absence of energy or ability in the same way that silence is. Stillness is having a choice and choosing to wait on God. As it says in Isaiah, those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Stillness is latent energy. It's deep water. It's preparation. It's quiet strength. And by our life choices, we can choose to be people of silence with nothing to say. Or we can choose to be people of quietness, content, at peace, trusting, maybe with weakness, we're not looking around us. Or we can choose to be people of inner stillness, our eyes wide open, our hearing tuned to the still small voice of God, ready for His word, ready to speak when He directs, able to see what is real and what is mirage. Progress and stillness are friends, not enemies. I was at OCC last Sunday, and somebody had written up on the whiteboard there a quote by G.K. Chesterton, and it said, Tourists see what they go to see. Travelers see what there is to see. And sometimes our danger is in that as we rush around, the things that we think are important maybe aren't actually the things that are actually important. You remember Elijah and his problem after he had won the wonderful victory over the priests of Baal, and how he was brought to discouragement and defeat afterward, and how he was led by God into the wilderness. And I'm going to break in here in 1 Kings 19, verse 9. He says, he came thither to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go forth, and stand upon the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains, and brake in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord is not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord is not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord is not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. It was so, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle, and went out, and stood in the entering into the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him, and said, what doest thou here, Elijah? In the quiet, Elijah heard the voice of God. And then God spoke into his life what he needed to hear to continue on with his work. Don't be afraid of the silence, of the stillness. Jesus said, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. And then he goes on to give the parable of the wise and the foolish men, who both built, and probably who both built similar-looking houses, I'm going to guess. One fell, and one stayed strong. We must not only build, we must build as wise people. We must not only move, we must move effectively. And let's pray that God would direct us And then let us be quiet and still enough that we can hear his direction. And remember that what we have in our hearts, that which inhabits our stillness, our quietness, or our lack thereof, gives birth to our words. A thankful heart speaks thankful words, and an unquiet heart speaks confusion and tumult. Let's pray that God would speak into our heart and that we're willing to listen to him.